There are secrets out there, guys. Performance marketing secrets, and knowing just one or two of them can absolutely light up your funnels. Let's go. This is the Revenue Driven CMO. I'm your host, Chris McKinnick. Join me as I uncover the secrets of the world's most elite CMOs marketing leaders. The Revenue Driven CMO is sponsored by Web Mechanics, the AI-driven performance agency that makes you smarter. Hello again, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Revenue Driven CMO. I'm your man, Chris Mechanic. Have a super duper exciting guest here with us. Today's guest is a marketing leader. He is a challenger. He thrives on challenges. He has worked in B2B, B2C, startups, Fortune 500, and really made a name for himself by helping brands gain unfair share of proper positioning with superior go-to-market strategy and obsessive focus on execution and impact. We did a little prep call before this show. He's got some really awesome content to share with us today. He is ex-MasterCard, where he was Senior VP of Data and Services for a few years. He's a member of the CMO Alliance and currently Chief Marketing Officer at Blueconic, which is the leading pure-play customer data platform, helping companies liberate their first-party data. So, ladies and gentlemen, please welcome to the show, Mr. Patrick Reynolds. Patrick, excited to have you, man.
Thanks for having me. Happy Friday.
Yeah, thank you. Happy Friday to you as well. So, you know, our listeners, we're all about secrets here. You know, a single secret or two can really open things up and really change the game. I know you've experienced that. Why don't you share with the audience, like, what is one of your biggest and best kept secrets to success in marketing?
Well, I think good marketers are a little bit voyeuristic, and that we like to watch and really observe what's going on. And so I think the key for me, the way that I've always done it, is to try to be kind of invisible, but still present until the customer is in a position that they want to talk to you, and then make it seem like you've been there forever. So I think right now you've got a lot of brands that are creating a lot of noise and, frankly, confusion in the marketplace, whatever space you're in, particularly in the space that I'm in, software, by like, buy me, try me, all this sort of very loud, clanging cymbal kind of motions, when people are just maybe in initial research phase, or they're even pre that. So all you have to do is just be there, but be there in the way that they need you to be there. If they're researching, have some useful content for them. If they're getting a consideration set together, show how you compare feature for feature, head to head with some people they're logically to be looking at, et cetera, instead of this kind of buy messaging from the get-go all up and down the funnel.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense.
We call it horses for courses. That's the way we think of it.
Horses for courses. What do you mean by that?
Horses for courses means like make the right thing for where we are in the process. So if somebody, again, is researching, be super useful. Help them research, actually. Let them come to whatever conclusion they're going to come to. Because if you sort of oversell them at the upper funnel, when they get down to the lower funnel, eventually you'll get found out and you'll have just wasted a bunch of time and money anyway. So give them what they need when they need it in the form factor they need it is basically what horses for courses is.
Got it. Hey, exclusive for listeners of this podcast, Web Mechanics will do 10 to 20 hours of work for you for free. Literally no sales calls, no BS. Just give them a problem and they will put a team to work for you for free for 10 to 20 hours, even if you're already a client. If you're struggling with demand gen, lead gen, SEO, SEM, Google Ads, LinkedIn Ads, conversion optimization, if you can't get Facebook or Meta Ads to work for the life of you, or you can't figure out attribution, Web Mechanics will take a good hard look at whatever problem you give them, whatever programs you put in front of them, and they will give you an objective, informed opinion, plus some advice from 10 to 20 hours of senior level attention. So I would suggest take them up on this offer. It's ridiculous. Go to revenuedrivencmo.com/free, fill out the 2-minute form, and you will not regret it. Literally zero downside, unlimited potential for growth. So do yourself a favor, revenuedrivencmo.com/free, no hyphens, no punctuations, you will be happy about that decision. Got it. I like that. Horses for courses. And so, you know, it's one of the great challenges of marketing, I think, meeting people where they are in that buying process. And of course, it's different by channel, right? Like, it might be a little bit easier on your website than it is maybe out in the wild on social media.
Yeah.
Do you have any special techniques for, like, how do you know whether they're in research mode or consideration set making? Like, how do you actually, before you even ask, like, hey, how can I help them? You kind of have to know where they are. How do you guys handle that?
Yeah. So I think there's a couple of ways. The first thing is there's some really good sort of intent tools out there now that tell you when people are sort of researching or your name's coming up in various searches. They're on G2, if you're talking about software, whatever the case is. So there is some data out there and some software that can help you know, like, hey, we have somebody who might be starting the circle the boat out there. You might want to, you know, be aware of that. So that's the first thing. We try to leverage that. And then we bump that up against our sort of database of named accounts and be like, you know, is this somebody that we're really interested in talking to? Is it a good fit, right? Shape and size, et cetera. The other thing that we do, and honestly, it's a lot more effective than the first, is we're just really blessed to have a lot of customers who are very sort of forthcoming. And it's like, so tell us, how did you get here? You know, now you're a Bluecona customer. That's awesome. What was your consideration set? What were the steps you took? Tell me about the dark funnel, which, you know, we really don't have much line of sight into at all, hence the name dark funnel. You know, how long did it take you from the time you got greenlit for budget in your organization to the time you made a decision? And so we really try to talk to our customers about their journey and then look for sort of lookalikes out there or use that to inform our approach.
Oh, that's really smart. That's definitely smart. I heard about this company recently. This is kind of a tangent, but they offer a service whereby they essentially do assessments and analysis like that, like what you're talking about, for closed loss deals.
Yeah.
So, like, and we have attempted to do that at times where we've lost deals. We'll say, like, okay, sorry, it didn't work, but let's, you know, jump on a quick call just to get some feedback. And people will give some feedback, but they're sometimes too polite to, like, really tell it how it is.
You were a close second. You missed it by this much. It was a coin flip. Am I getting warmer? Is that about what it sounds like?
Yeah, pretty much.
Nobody's
pretty
ever been dead last. Or, like, you just shit the bed in that. It's like, oh, well, that's helpful. No, we don't. Always like, oh, so close. Such a tough decision.
Yeah, but I thought that was really interesting. Like, you could glean some of that buying process information from that, but you could also maybe glean some constructive or maybe some little bit of the harsher variety feedback on the entire marketing journey as well as the sales journey.
Yeah. So maybe the third leg of that stool. So we have some software that helps us with intent. We do a really good job talking to our customers about their processes and what they went through. I think the third leg of the stool was probably we're building out a really robust sort of partner network. And typically when we're engaged with a prospect, one of our partners is already sort of part of the stack or working with them, and they can get sort of side door intel, you know, that people are generally a little bit more forthcoming if they don't think you're connected to that company. So they might just be like, it came down to ease of use, it came down to money, it came down to a mandate from on high that we need to, you know, do as much with Salesforce as we can, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah. No, that makes a lot of sense.
Partners are a really good way to get that. Really good way.
Yeah. You know, one technique that we've used is like self-segmentation mechanisms or self-selection mechanisms, where it's like, you know, like, suppose you're buying traffic from LinkedIn or whatever it is. You might on your landing page have, like, instead of a form being there with, like, hey, give me your name and email, you can ask them a different question, which can be a clue into who they are or what they need.
Yeah.
So for instance, it might be like, you know, the first page might be your headline and a little bit of copy talking about the ebook. And then it might have a question like, are you B2B or B2C?
Yep.
And so we usually use it to segment, like, in terms of, hey, is it this audience or that audience? But I imagine you could do similar things using signals from your own website.
Like 1,000%. Instance, yeah.
Yeah. Like if they view three pages and all three of those pages are case studies, you know, you can assume that they're probably a little bit lower in the buying cycle.
Yeah. Or if they're looking at most common use cases for a consumer goods company. Okay. So that they're probably in that space. And then it's right. Then you can look at the nature of, is it like we just put out a white paper last week, or an ebook, I guess it is technically, about how to author a proper RFP, because, you know, people put out a lot of bad RFPs that don't get them back the sort of candidates that they actually need. So if somebody is looking at that, we can infer that they're about to get into a process, right? So they're low funnel. Whereas if somebody's like common use cases for a CDP, we know they're probably a little bit more upper funnel.
Yeah, yeah. Actually, I'm on your site right now on the Blue Conic site, and you have.
I see you. No, I'm kidding. I don't.
That's funny. But you have some of these mechanisms already, so you're already hip to that game. Like I'm looking at your CDP readiness assessment right now. That's a great asset.
Yeah. Tell us what you need, and you know the way we think about it. Obviously, it's helpful for us. But it's also not insulting for the customer. Like, tell me what you need and I will give you my best shot at that. I'm not going to try to jam you with something that you obviously aren't interested in or don't need. So let's just be honest.
Yep. You know, I think that's a really innovative and forward thinking way to do it. So it's almost like, because right now there is like marketing teams often, it's almost like us versus the customer, you know?
Correct.
It's like, let's send them to a squeeze page. Let's convert them. Let's capture leads. You know, it's like all this like target. Militaristic like language, right?
Right.
But my takeaways from this is almost like market with the customer, like make the sale, capture the lead, whatever, with the customer in transition with them and basically ask them what they want and then give it to them. Like that seems to be a lot easier. And it feels better, frankly, than you know, squeezing and capturing and
jamming
things
be educated. You know, there's sort of three legs to that too. There's the like, here's how we see the world. Here's what we think about ourselves. Adjacent to that is here's some things customers say about us. And adjacent to that is here's some things that, you know, analysts say about us. So when people do inquiries for us, you know, there was just, as you may have read in the last month, Gartner came out with the first ever magic quadrant about CDPs. And so, you know, rather than cherry picking, you know, the best lines about what it says about Blue Conic, when somebody, you know, gets to a certain point in the process, we're like, here's the entire report. Read it. You can read everything they said about us. You can read everything they said about our competitors. You can read where they think the market is going, where they think the market is, et cetera. Because again, there's no point in playing games and then either losing at the last minute or even worse, winning a customer and having them churn, you know, early on. Like that helps nobody. So let's not do that.
Yeah, 100%. So I'm curious about like when you developed this philosophy or how you sort of learned about this. And also like what types of, so there was this moment, right, where probably Patrick, the early marketer, maybe thought a different way. And then Patrick learned or adopted this philosophy, at least. I'm curious about what happened after you did that in terms of performance or response or feedback that you were receiving, like after you made that transition.
Yeah. So again, we started to get a little more dialed into what the buyer needed from us at various points in the journey. As I myself started to buy software. So I do buy software from other vendors, not at all unlike or dissimilar to how our customers buy software from Blue Conic. And I started to, you know, take very detailed notes about like, why is this person sending me 42 emails in a week and a Yeti and a gift card for this? When I have expressed zero interest in this category, or they should know that I actually already have something comparable to that, et cetera, et cetera. So it just treats everybody like a number, which is zero. Mm-hmm. So I said, please do not let me catch us doing that. So we started to eat our own dog food, so to speak, and learn like how not to do it. You can learn a lot by bad examples. And so we're like, okay, this is kind of stupid. However, when I go to G2, I want to do some research. We're not showing up here in the way that I think is putting our best foot forward. Like, let's really make that a persuasive, compelling, yet objective document. Let's make sure we're working the analyst community to give them where we are right now so that they can represent that to people that we may never come in contact with. It really is, again, turning the camera around to be, instead of shouting what you want everybody to know about you, think about it from the position of the buyer or the prospective buyer. What do they need at what point of the journey? And try to get them that as seamlessly and ideally invisibly as possible so that it's not so shouty.
Yeah. No, that makes a lot of sense. So this was a fairly recent revelation for you then.
No, I mean, going back to Session M, you know, I was the CMO of Session M for many years, and it was the same thing. You know, you need a new ESP, you need a new this, you need a new that. And it's like, number one, no, I don't. I don't know why you think that. Number two, you should know that we ourselves have that functionality. Number three, I mean, it's this cannon fire that just doesn't work anymore. And you know, what's really been greatly exacerbated by even LinkedIn saying, like, do you want to look at your like kind of real inbox or your shit inbox? Like, you can look at either, but like, you probably want to look at the real one, right? Like the not stupid outreach.
Yeah.
And your own, like, we have outreach, you know, it's like, do you want to look at focused, you know, good emails or spam emails? Like, who's like, yeah, let me look at the spam emails for a while. I mean, no. Right. And when somebody does get into your, you know, sort of tier one feed, do you want to block this? Every day I just block, 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 block.
Jim Oakes. That'll be the
podcast title.
Yeah. I never want to hear from these Jim Oakes again. That's awesome. Cool. Well, tell me about Blueconic a little bit for folks that don't know. I think CDP is still in the early stages of adoption, honestly, especially in the B2B world where there's a lot of tech already there established and it's kind of functions like a CDP. But how do you sort of distinguish in your own mind between CRM, marketing automation, like where does CDP fit in? And then just a general intro to Blueconic would be great for folks that aren't familiar.
So it really is that single view of the customer or that best view of the customer in light of the context. So let me explain what that means. So a CDP kind of sits there and it takes, I think I read something in, actually it was just in Forrester, that the average person interacts with 14 separate channels of their most common brands. So that would be mobile, in-store, web, et cetera, social, and so on and so forth. So it'll connect all those things to a single profile. So P. Reynolds goes to me, Patrick Reynolds goes to me, Buffalo Reynolds goes to me, whatever I do over there goes to me. I came into the store, that goes to me. So you have a holistic and complete picture of what the customer is doing. And from there, you can do a next, you know, kind of a next best action as to what they should do next. So that's kind of what CDP does. There are some people that you've alluded to that can do some of those things, but only for the channels that they're aware of. So what's cool about a CDP and Blueconic in particular is totally agnostic. You can feed anything you want into it and it'll all get assigned to the single profile. Whereas other people say like, well, we know email and text, but we don't have anything in store. We don't do POS. We don't do this. We don't do that. So it's a little bit more comprehensive than some other ways.
Yeah.
And that's cool.
So who's using CDP? Like who's actually logging in? Is it like the point of sale people, you know, at Starbucks say can pull up your profile and see everything? Or is it more like marketers use it?
It's marketers for the most part, or business users. It's somebody who wants to look at segmentation. It's somebody who wants to dynamically segment different things. You know, we ran a special, people who bought it, they automatically become a part of a segment, and then we want to do the following with them. So it's typically marketers and, you know, really hands-on keyboard thing. It's funny, there's a lot of talk now about, you know, generative AI and AI just, you know, more broadly. And some of that stuff is really, really cool. And some of it is frankly very noisy. It's just creating more noise, not less noise. And that is what it is. But I think one of the cool things about Blueconic is from the beginning, we're talking about like 7, 8, 9 years, it has been made so that it's for marketers and you don't have to know code. You don't have to do like SQL to make it work. Whereas if you're working directly with a data warehouse, for example, it can do some of the things that CDP can do if you know how to work with it. And typically that involves writing code, right? And so we were built by design for hands-on keyboard marketers and no code required, which is in vogue now for some people. It's how we were created. We were born no code, if you will. So that's kind of cool.
That is very cool. It sounds like not a big learning curve, no code required, which is always a good thing. What are they doing in there though? Like, are they just viewing data? Or like, what are the top use cases? Like, so, you know, they're in there. They might look at a list. They might be like, hey, show me everybody that came in and bought a double espresso and has opened a text message. But then what?
Yeah, so you're creating segments in there. You're looking at the segments you have. You're looking to see if you need to create new segments. You might take those segments and look for lookalikes out in, you know, sort of the marketplace from an advertising perspective. So you might give your most successful segments to someone else in marketing and say, go look for people that have these characteristics and look for more of those. You can, again, you can use it to inform kind of next best action, like what's the next message? What's the next offer? What's the next experience we want to give the customer? It can really just do, you know, anything that you want to do to get more personalized all the time. So with every new piece of data, you can generate a new kind of experience if you want to.
Interesting. So now does it pull in only the audience dimensions and activity, or does it also have like numeric data? For instance, like, can you see open rates of a certain email spliced by a certain audience?
So you can plug into whatever data, you know, essentially it's like, it's very open. You can put whatever you want into there. We don't do a lot of PII. We don't do any PII. So it doesn't, you know, we wouldn't do that kind of stuff, but you could see this ID bought this thing, other things in that basket were the following, or they abandoned cart on this particular thing. So you can see, anything that you kind of want to.
Oh, wow. So there's no PII. Okay. I didn't realize that. Is that common with CDPs? Like they generally go PII?
It's pretty common. Like, you know, there are some people that are built for healthcare or certain things that that rely on PII. That's just not a world that we want to be in. We actually started in the Netherlands where privacy and compliance are super important and always have been. We're sort of gaining, like we're arriving at where they've been for a long time in Europe. So yeah, that was just something that we didn't want to mess with from the beginning.
Interesting. Okay. So then I found my segment, I've got, you know, the list of IDs and any other attributes and dimensions that you got there. So now I want to email this segment, right? Like I want to send them an email. How do I do that?
We would export the segment to however you are emailing to your...
I see. So
Adobe, Salesforce, whatever, your ESP.
So it's a two-way. It's a two-way connection. So the data pushes in and you can push the data out.
Exactly.
Nice. And you can push the audiences to ad platforms?
Sure. Like very common. Very, very common. Yeah. So you can say this segment is really performing. Let's, you know, spend against that segment in the lookalike market.
Yeah. So I notice on your site, you mentioned the post-cookie era and first-party data. So for a brand that is very reliant right now on third-party audiences, how would this be helpful for them exactly?
Well, number one, we can organize the first-party data that you already have. That's really important. Number two, we can help you gather and collect more first-party data that you can use to not only engage that first-party customer base, but to your point earlier, find other customers like them, which you used to do exclusively with third-party cookies. We can do things like very common for, you know, retailers or consumer goods company. We can do second party data and create a clean room where, you know, you can put your data in there. You can have a vendor or a partner, you know, put there and see who's most profitable from both sides. Anonymously go look for more lookalikes like that from a segment perspective. So there's all kinds of stuff you can do. You just have to kind of wean yourself off of this idea that you just buy audiences and everybody's buying the same audience, which is again kind of goofy. So it's like, let's use what you have to its full potential. That's
yeah. And the audiences are old.
Right. Know? Yeah.
And like, you know, multiple people use one computer, you know, so like my, the cookies on my machine are like my browsing habits plus my wife's, basically, right? So they're not even very accurate, really.
Well, you know, it's funny. If you just think about, again, one of the things that I like to do, you know, from a marketing perspective is something I learned a long time ago, which is be a keen observer of like people in life. So I think about actual humans, not as targets or, you know, all the things we talked about earlier. But like where I live on my block, I look around and like there's a lot of sameness on my block, but I'm entirely different than my neighbors. Like they're in the medical field, they're older, they have, you know, and it's like, so if you say like, oh, this zip code behaves like this, it really doesn't. Even this block doesn't behave like this.
Right. Yeah.
And even people to your point within this house.
Starbucks. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Right. So I have moved back to my beloved hometown of Buffalo after 20 years in Boston. So I'm looking for where's the Dunkin'. Everybody here is looking for where's the Tim Hortons. So we're not alike in that respect. So, you know, it's like that's the stuff that you can learn with first party data that you can't out in the sort of generic third party marketplace.
Yeah. I love Buffalo. There's a really good
seat still available. Come on, brother.
There's this really nice hot dog place there. I can't remember the name of it, but I was like,
Ted's.
Yeah, that's it. And the Anchor Bar, of course.
Of course.
All right. Well, let's talk Blueconic marketing. I'm curious, what's driving your revenue engine? Like, is it mostly search? Is it mostly outbound or social? Like, what sort of channels or go-to-market motions are really lighting up the cash registers for you guys?
So for us, really, it's kind of for all the reasons mentioned earlier, you know, we're a really good inbound shop. Like we do a lot of inbound because we're creating that stuff that pulls people in and pulls people in and pulls people in. So I'm really pleased with that. It's also very efficient. On top of that, we do a lot of ABM. So like we know who we want to go after. We know who's a good fit for Blueconic. We know the industry. We know the sort of tiers, you know, the size of customer. We know typically kind of what's in their stack. And then we just try to get in front of those people in, again, sort of organic and authentic kind of way without being like, buy Blueconic. So we try to learn about them, send them some stuff that they can research, all the things. And then when it comes time to facilitate a conversation, we try to hand them off to the right person who's got some experience with, you know, companies just like theirs.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Yeah, we could have a whole nother segment on ABM because I'm curious for your approach. I bet you it's an elevated approach, right? Because a lot of times ABM approaches are just like concentrated version of spam your TAM.
Correct. This is all lowercase. I know that would be, you know, grammatically incorrect, but it's like lowercase ABM. Which means like know who you're going after and then just try to be where they are in a way that feels good for us and them. And then when they're ready to buy, be there.
Yeah.
And of course, you can incentivize them and you know, you're trying to draw them in logically, but at their pace.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're not selling coffee. We're selling, you know, multi-$100,000, multi-year software agreements. You can't just sort of bullshit your way through it.
Yeah. You know, a lot of what you're talking about lends itself to one of my philosophies on websites is that I think about websites as a way to facilitate the buying process and the buying decision.
Yeah.
So it's like, it's almost as if like most companies have a pitch deck separately that they'll show you on the sales call. It's almost like you might as well just have your pitch deck right there on the site. most companies, their sales teams have their top five objections or top 10 objections, reasons not to buy, and they have their canned responses for those objections. Why not just have those on the site available and like set it up in such a way where it's a journey where people can guide themselves through that almost all the way to the point of sale, right? It's almost like take everything that you're doing in the sales process and, you know, put that on your site, some gated, maybe some not, most not gated, but then in advance, get your signals set up and your signals firing. So that data can post back to Blueconic and be like, you know, in your hot list, if they're sitting there reading through the list of objection handlers.
Yeah.
But I could foresee a day where like, and oftentimes our goal with our client is to make it not only so that we're getting leads and demos, but that so those folks are pretty much arrive to the call more or less ready to buy, or like they have their short list of questions whittled down, you know, so that that sale is much, much easier.
1000%. It's gone from, and there are still lots of people that do it this way, and which I think is unfortunate, but it's, you know, a glorified sell sheet though, where it's like, here's all the things we want you to know about us. It's really, here's all the things that you need to answer the questions that you have, or you wouldn't be here.
Yeah.
Right?
100%. So yep.
What do we do? We do this. Who do we do it for? Here's a list of customers. How does it work? Here's a list of their testimonials. What do the analysts say? Here's a link to the report. Want to talk to somebody? Click here. Let's have that conversation. But like, we're not here to, you know, just sell. That comes later.
Yeah. And basically just fill the top, right? Like get more people to the site, yeah, filling the top, as opposed to just like banging the bottom, you know, over the head 100 times in a way that turns them off, frankly.
Yeah. And, you know, we do gate some stuff, but it's pretty judicious because we want to give away stuff that helps people make a decision. You know, there's certain things like around secret sauce and all that that we'll want to gate and talk to you specifically about it. But, you know, the vast majority is like, here it is.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And especially with the advent of AI, like I can see a day when a ChatGPT fueled chatbot that's also injected with like all of your own company data, like all of your sales information and objection handlers and things, is like doing the majority of the sale.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think that's here. I mean, I really think that that's, you know, that's not a distant star in the galaxy. I think, you know, there are, I mean, it's probably very early days, but there are a lot of people that are going to, with generative AI, walk you through the process from A to Z. And then if you are like, okay, I have my pen, then they'll grab a human or maybe they won't. I don't know. But I mean, I think that's really happening.
Yeah. No, I would definitely agree. I want to tell you about one dorky thing, which I'm sure the listeners would know. I discovered it just a couple of days ago, but there are a lot of tools like Sixth Sense or ZoomInfo and things, which will show you company-wise, like which companies are interacting and which anonymously and which you know, organizations or industries or what have you. I found one called rb2b.com, like letter rb2b,
okay,
which takes it to the individual level, and I don't know if this will meld with your psychology, but like, and you can connect it with your Slack, which is free. To push it to a CDP or something, they charge for, but you connect it with your Slack and it literally shows you a list of each individual person that it can identify, and it links it like their LinkedIn profile. It shows you the pages that they view, but it was super cool. We just found that last week. And so we're all in there scrolling, and like, you see a lot of people that, you know, for instance, like I saw this guy, who actually had been a pod guest like a year ago, was on the site. So I didn't email him immediately. I waited like a day or two, but then I emailed him something just like, hey, how's it been? And he came back and he was like, hey, I just referred somebody to you guys. Have they reached out to you yet? And also, by the way, like, blah, blah, blah. Like, basically became an opportunity.
Yeah.
Super cool.
It is. You know, the thing that I think will be interesting to see how it plays out over time is how many of those are your brother-in-law? How many of those are competitors? How many of those are just trying to sell you something, et cetera, et cetera. It's almost more useful to me from my sort of opportunity cost perspective to like look at the companies. It's like, oh, okay, if it's, you know, McDonald's, I'm going to jump on that. If it's, you know, a market research company or something else, it's like, oh, that's good to know. But I don't know that I need to go as low to the ground as the individual level, but it certainly couldn't hurt. I mean, and that space is getting, you know, really, really interesting. The question is like, how far could it go before it butts up against privacy things? Because we're very close to the dawn of an age where we can all have invisibility cloaks. And then what?
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. Well, then you would have to connect your website with a wallet and actually pay people a little bit to remove their invisible quote cloak, right?
Stranger things have happened. Yeah.
It's like zero party data.
Yeah, that's like, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I allow you to use my data. Just give me 0.001 cents per page view.
Right. You pay me and I'll think about it.
Yeah. But it could be, kind of to your point, a good way to validate some of those intent signals. Because, for instance, like we had somebody visit from American Express, which would be a whale client for us. Like we would love to work with them, right? But it was like some junior level marketer that downloaded like some hands-on keyboard type asset, you know? So it wasn't like really intent, but it would probably show up in the intent stream.
Right. And now you don't want to go to the meeting saying, I've got great news. Amex is, you know, thinking about buying. It's like, no, that's not what it said actually, is it?
Right. Cool, man. Well, this is awesome. I have just a couple more things on my docket here and then I'll let you go and enjoy the rest of your Friday. But I am curious, what are you guys excited about? Like, or what are you investing in? Like what's on the horizon for you marketing wise? Any cool tools or platforms or GTM motions that you guys are working on?
I think building out our community marketing efforts a little bit more is really big for us, and getting more specific and granular about it instead of, you know, just a customer community and a partner community. We're doing things with like hands-on keyboard community. Like what are the hacks and tips and tricks that you need to do your job more efficiently every day? Because there's only so many hours of the day. That would be one. You're a consumer goods company. Like, what are the segments that you're using that are yielding the biggest returns? And how can we attach other data to those to make it even more robust, et cetera? So doing it by vertical, really getting into the doing it by geography, et cetera. So just trying to bring people together to talk about shared, you know, problems and opportunities and ways that we can collab to solve those or capitalize on them. That's really kind of the next turn for us.
That's huge. Yeah, we've doubled down on community over the last few years too. We don't have necessarily like a forum, but we've invested in a newsletter.
Yeah.
And we put a lot of time and effort into like making the content really good. And we send it out a few times a week. So it's like, you know, full-time job really.
Yeah.
But we've been able to grow that list up over 5,000 people, like within the course of a couple of years. And we use that now, like when we have a new webinar or when we have, you know, something that we want to promote, we hit that list and there's always, you know, dozens, if not hundreds of responses. So we're sort of starting, we're laying the groundwork with that email. And then if we ever do launch like an actual community where people can go and, you know, engage, we would populate it basically with that email list.
Yeah, we do stuff very similar. And then typically at the end of something, we'll have like a webinar type thing for that community to like, here's some stuff that we want you to know about. What do you want us to know about? What do you want each other to know about? Cool. See you next month.
Yeah, that's so powerful though, because people, I think a lot of times, especially in the post-pandemic world, like people really crave interaction with peers.
Totally.
Especially peers. Like it's one thing to hang out with the peers at your own company, but to see other, like, you know, people at other companies, It's like, yeah, you could go to events, you know, but that's a really time intensive way to do it.
And a lot of that budget's been slashed. Yeah, we've got to create forms for people to do at least this level of interaction, you know, as opposed to just Slack and email and stuff like that. Like, it's helpful periodically to see actual animate beings and be able to read, you know, facial expressions and if they're really, you know, glomming onto the idea or they're not. I mean, I think that's really helpful. And just to be able to ask questions and it's creating forums, which is another way to say communities. It's sort of an adjunct to that, is just massively important. I might argue it's the most important thing because it's just getting so hard to have genuine on the level interactions. That's kind of the role of a marketer now. It's like, how can I create forums for people to connect with each other, with a seller maybe, but it's like genuine like connections that's informed. Kind of what you said. It's like when you get to the meeting, you know what you want to talk about. You know what? So like, let's just dispense with the mishigas and let's just get to it. That's kind of a key role for marketers, I think.
Yeah. Just out of curiosity, do you have like a go-to community, like a CMO community that you really value? Or is it the CMO Alliance maybe?
I'm in the CMO Alliance. I'm in a part of a few that are cool. But yeah, and sometimes it's just an ad hoc email, you know, list
of
teen people that, you know, just are on a thread or a text thread. Even in some cases, there are people who are doing similar things and generally different industries, people I've worked with along the way. And it's like, has anybody worked with these guys? Has anybody had any experience with this? Like, what do you think about this? Like, should I be worried about, like, it's just, you need to find your, you know, find your people.
Yeah. 100%.
And marketing should foster that, help people find their people.
Yeah, I agree. Cool. Well, one final question before the lightning round is, it seems like you guys are doing a lot right. It seems like you're having great success. You're like growing like a weed. The product seems awesome. What are some of the challenges or the biggest challenges?
What keeps you up? The biggest challenge is inertia. I think, you know, the marketplace, partially because of marketers creating so much noise, partially because of a chaotic environment, at least in the United States, but frankly, everywhere, geopolitical environment. There's just a lot of stuff that has people kind of on edge. And so I think I think within Vista, they call it, it's gone from fear of missing out to fear of fucking up, FOFU or FOMU, messing up if you're in a PG kind of a company. Mm-hmm. I think that's real. I don't think it's real. I know it's real. So people are, it's like no sudden movements. It's kind of a weird time. I don't want to necessarily write a big check. So there's a little bit of that. And what we found is our close rate is pretty consistent, but deals have taken longer to get done a little bit because people are just like, can you just do that in triplicate and like, tell me once more how it works. And, you know, like, yeah, so it's just been a little cautious. So I would say inertia, getting people like off the dime and putting it's their like, name on the line.
It's like, could you just call me and assuage my concerns one last time?
That's kind of it. That's kind of it. Just tell me one more time. It's going to be okay. It's like, yeah, we got you. It's going to be fine. Yeah. Or it's like, don't believe me. Like talk to a customer or talk to an analyst. But, you know, I would do the same thing if I were them. So it's a weird time. It's a weird time.
Interesting. You guys are a Vista company?
We are.
Oh, I didn't know that. I love Vista. We work with several of their porcos.
Yeah. No, they're great. And the beauty of Vista is they have so many companies. For those of you who don't know, you know, they only invest in technology companies. And so we see and hear it all. And, you know, we know what's going on oftentimes before, you know, some of our competitors might, just because they're so deeply ingrained in the tech ecosystem.
That's pretty cool. So that's like a built-in community right there.
I'm a part of the CMO community within Vista. I'm a part of our portfolio, you know, has mixed role people in a little community in there. So, yeah, we get together every, you know, sort of quarter or so. There's tons that can be gleaned from that community.
That's awesome. Yeah, we spoke at one of those events a while back, and it was a very lively and energetic and bright crowd.
A lot of smart folks inside of Vista. A lot of smart folks.
Yeah, absolutely. Cool. All right. Well, this has been an amazing interview. I learned a lot. I really enjoyed the conversation. I'm very impressed by you and by Blueconic. I think you guys have a lot going for you. So thank you for joining here.
It's been fun. Always good to chat.
Yeah. And for everybody listening, if you learned anything here today, or if you laughed a little bit even, why not drop us a like, share this with your with a friend, or drop us a 5-star review wherever you downloaded this pod. We definitely appreciate that. Let's do the lightning round real quick, and then we'll get you out of here. All right. Are you ready? Question number one.
Play the feud.
Here we go. Question number one is, if you were to start a side hustle, what side hustle would that be?
I'm really, really interested in how technology could change the way that we think about education, from both how we teach and how students learn. And is there not an opportunity to bring technology more into learning so that we can be more democratic, lowercase d, with giving everybody access to awesome education? I don't see any reason why the best high school teacher in America, why she couldn't teach every student of, you know, Shakespeare, whoever wanted to, like, what, why not?
That's admirable. Yeah. Like Khan Academy almost.
Exactly. Exactly. But, you know, in a actual baking technology into the building, if you will.
I like that. That's really cool. Question number two is, what are you reading? Like, what are your top three books or authors or websites, or where are you getting the information that you rely on?
So I'm a big player guy.
Oh, Atomic Habits. Love that.
I love.
I just downloaded that actually. Love
his weekly email. Super pithy. And it's like, it's not asking me to buy anything. It's like, oh, I can use all this shit that you put into email. Also, his masterclass is a masterclass. That sounds very meta. But if you have masterclass, his masterclass is awesome. Mm. I would say, bigger picture, I've always been hugely impressed with Clayton Christensen and jobs theory and disruption. It's always been super interesting and clear and persuasive to me. Those are the Good to Great was a book that I thought just really crystallized a lot of things. I am a sort of a reductionist. I like to get things as simple as they possibly can be before they're meaningless. And he was amazing at that in that book.
Yeah.
How do you make money? What fuels your economic engine? What do you do better than your competitor? What do customers want? Figure out that intersection and you're golden.
Yeah. I really like Good to Great too. And he's like the one metric that drives your business, which for Walgreens, it was like, how many locations do we have at the corner of the intersection or whatever it was?
How many state and main locations do you have? Boom. Drop the mic. That's all you need to know.
Right. Cool. And then question number three is, how do you avoid burnout, and how do you help your team also to avoid burnout?
It's really hard in a remote situation where, well, you know, we have very few people sitting next to anybody. Other than their cat or their dog or something like that. So I think it's really a challenge. The biggest challenge of my managerial career, which is not an insignificant amount of time, sadly. I think we talk a lot about separating your work life from your life. Don't get it twisted. You'll have many different jobs. You'll work for a bunch of different things, whether or not, you know, we attain 112% of our targets, or, you know, 88%. I'm pretty confident the sun will come up tomorrow and it's all going to be fine in the end.
Yeah.
Still be hyper competitive. Don't get me wrong, but it's like, it's relative, right? Whereas life, the world now, you know, it started with COVID. We're in this really weird political time. There's just a lot of shit going on. And that's more important than that. So we talk a lot about, I don't want your whole you. I need you to do these jobs. When you do those jobs, go be the real you that you want to be, and I'll see you tomorrow. So yeah. Like let's, which is not to say we, you know, we're not personal, but it's like, I get that you have other things. You've got a sick kid, you've got a sick parent, you've got a whatever. So let's keep those separate. The other thing, paradoxically though, is I'm a bit of a speed freak. I really like to move quickly. I like to get the decisions quickly. And sometimes that could be like, okay, we've discussed it enough. It can almost feel a little abrupt. The reason is I want to do my work so that I can leave here and go to my life. And the more we kind of like, bah, 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 the less time I have for my life. And I think the same should apply to you. So it's my job as the leader of the pack to be like, let's get through this efficient, and that's got to be thorough, but let's go through it as efficiently as we can. And then when we're done, let's close the clamshell and go out into the sunshine in Buffalo, where it's always sunny, and get on with whatever it is you like to do. You go out with your family, go out with your friends, go for a walk by yourself. I don't care what you do, but like, I just don't think things need to drag on as long as they do. Let's like get to it and then whoosh, out.
Love that. Love that. Very cool. Well, this has been awesome. Stay on the line. Just one last moment. We're going to wrap up. For folks that want to learn more about you or Bluconic, where would you direct them to?
I would direct them to Bluconic, BLUECONIC, bluconic.com.
Perfect. All right, everybody. Well, that was another exciting episode of Revenue Driven CMO. Thank you for tuning in, and we will see you next time. And that's a wrap. Thanks for joining us here today. For show notes and other episodes, visit us at revenuedrivencmo.com. That's revenuedrivencmo.com. And hey, exclusive for listeners of this podcast, Web Mechanics will do 10 to 20 hours of work for you for free. Literally no sales calls, no BS. Just give them a problem and they will put a team to work for you for free for 10 to 20 hours. Even if you're already a client, if you're struggling with demand gen, lead gen, SEO, SEM, Google ads, LinkedIn ads, conversion optimization, if you can't get Facebook or Meta ads to work for the life of you, or you can't figure out attribution, Web Mechanics will take a good hard look at whatever problem you give them, whatever programs you put in front of them, and they will give you an objective, informed opinion, plus some advice from 10 to 20 hours of senior level attention. And that's just because you're a listener of this podcast. So I would suggest take them up on this offer. It's ridiculous. Go to revenuedrivencmo.com/free, fill out the 2-minute form, and you will not regret it. Literally zero downside, unlimited potential for growth. So do yourself a favor, revenuedrivencmo.com/free, no hyphens, no punctuations. You will be happy about that decision.